Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Yuka Tayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi every day on supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cook guests. My guest today is Mitsunori Isoda, who is the executive chef at Omakase Room by Mitsu in New York. Chef Mitsu serves authentic Japanese edomae-style sushi at his beautiful 8-seat Hinoki Wood Bar counter in Manhattan's West Village. And you can find great sushi restaurants in New York and other cities in the world these days, but we don't often get to understand the philosophy of each sushi chef. And in this episode, you'll find how a sushi chef strives to create the guest's best experience based on his own mindset that has been cultivated over the years. And Chef Mitsu was classically trained in Japan and came to the U.S. in 2006 to pursue his dream of making sushi in this country. Since then, he has gone through diverse experiences in America, but his philosophy has only solidified. So today we'll discuss what the essence of edomae sushi is, the key elements of great edomae sushi you should look for at sushi restaurants, Chef Mitsu's sushi making policy and philosophy behind it, how to become a sophisticated sushi diner. Yes, it's a bit intimidating to eat the sushi at the sushi counter. So we have a lot to talk about, so please stay with us until the end. So, and also before we start, Japanese is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Needs. And we appreciate your feedback. Thank you so much. Now let's start a conversation with Mitsunori Isoda. Hello, Mitsu. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
So to get to know you, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
I'm from the Osaka in Japan. I'm usually eat real traditional authentic Japanese food.
Okay. And well, if you say Osaka is the everybody's kitchen. Kitchen of yes. Everybody, I mean, from the rich to especially the public. So I'm sure you eat a lot of amazing, broad range of good food. And you've been cooking Japanese food for the last 35 years. And I heard that you wanted to be a sushi chef since you were very little. So what was that?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but already I was a kindergarten or preschool. Not sure. My mind always wanna chef. Then, especially making a sushi in a New York. That one is my mom. Passed away before. She told me, "You always say," but I never think about another job. I wanna do that. Cooking, then making the sushi. I always keep mine like that. I don't know why.
Well, maybe your mother really fed you well, and your dream naturally was born. But it was very specific. I wanted to be a sushi chef in New York at that young age. So we'll discover what happened to pursue it. But so you worked in well-established kitchens in Osaka and Tokyo before you moved to the U.S. So could you tell us where you worked in Japan?
I worked at Hotel New Otani, Osaka and Tokyo. I was a kaiseki chef. Also, I learned sushi. Then, I was 24 years old. I opened only reservation for one group, one day. Only one menu.
Wow.
Then, 10 years before I moved to the U.S., I did.
Right. So, for listeners who are not familiar with the Japanese hotel groups, Hotel New Otani is huge, like one of the most classic hotel chains. I mean, chain sounds like a little less sophisticated, but it's really like high-end establishments. So being a chef at the Hotel New Otani is really a prestigious thing. So it makes sense that you, Mitsu, you started such a exclusive, sophisticated restaurant. And nowadays, I think we see more limited number of guests per night kind of restaurants, but sounds like you are far ahead of time. So what did you learn from your experience in Japan?
Very traditional kaiseki style. I learned first plate name. Then, how you gonna take care for the fish, then vegetable or stuff.
Meaning plates of the name is meaning the Japanese plates are not just plates. They are coming from certain regions, and it's almost like a GI wine from Champagne, something like that. This kind of earthware comes from a specific region, and there are professionals to evaluate how much money that would cost if you want to pay for it, right? That kind of very specific serving vessels you're talking about.
Yes.
Right. So, so that means something that kaiseki cuisine, it's a multi-course dinner with traditional ingredients and mainly traditional cooking methods. But far behind it, there are some seasonal serving vessels. The spring, they have different styles, some are different styles, and then you need a warehouse for that. And it's a very expensive establishment. But even smaller Japanese restaurants, chefs choose something very beautiful, personally attached to certain bowls and plates, even chopsticks. And those things are really a big part of Japanese cuisine. And it sounds like you acquired the knowledge and attitude towards those kind of cheerleaders at the dining table, not just the food, right?
Yeah. Then also the culture, Japanese culture, very important for Japanese food, Japanese kaiseki, sushi also. Need a culture, the season, everything. I learned it in Japan.
Right. Okay. So it's funny that, you know, the Osaka and Tokyo are two different like dialect even, and the mindset, but sounds like you really studied broad range of Japanese traditions. So that's interesting. And so I heard you had a dream of making sushi. I mean,
yes.
you told me in New York when you were in Japan, when you grew up. So why did you want to make sushi in New York back then?
I saw the always cooking TV show, the Sushi Chef, the documentary, the TV show. Then I think very, very cool. That's why I want to make it like that. Sushi is mostly Yeah, cool, yeah, chef. But was 20 years ago, sushi chef, it's not like, popular yet. After Michelin star coming, then many sushi restaurant in Ginza, Tokyo. Then, little by little, sushi chef is coming popular.
Right. So sushi chef used to be just a craftsman, or some people would think it's artist, but it became like more like an artist. And I think it's the skill they really deserved, that huge attention and respect finally came thanks to the French rating system called Michelin. So that's very interesting. And then, so you came to New York in 2011, but you first worked in Tennessee. So in Tennessee, where did you work and what did you learn during that 5 years before you moved to New York?
It's Cordova in Tennessee. My sponsor was the many 8 restaurants in, yeah, not only Tennessee, like South area, Tennessee, Missouri, St. Louis. Yeah, I worked in Cordova, in Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah, very small restaurant that I was the executive chef. Then also the manager position. Then take care of, you know, the restaurant. Then I learned, I think the real American people there, then very different culture compared in Japan.
Right, and also probably back then, Japanese food was probably very different from, you know, now, because the Japanese food is now everywhere, and also I think in the South, even regardless of which part of the country, there's more ramen shops and more sushi shops, people are familiar with Japanese food, but I'm sure it was pretty challenging for you, right, to actually serve.
Right.
Traditional style.
Right. Oh, totally different. Of course, I learned American roll, spicy tuna stuff, California roll. Before, I never make it like that. So I was so culture shock.
Right. Were you upset at the beginning when you had to make California rolls? As a traditional
chef. I think that I have to learn the American people, the taste. But I don't mind making the California roll. Yeah. It was so fun.
Right. And also I think, you know, Japanese cuisine is based on cooking the best food, what's available. And avocado, for example, is such an abundant, beautiful, delicious ingredient. So why not? And even now, Japanese people started eating California rolls in Japan and spicy tuna roll in Japan. So there's no strict what's supposed to be. And delicious thing is delicious thing. So so you are part of that culture. So, and you worked After working in Tennessee, you worked at the legendary sushi restaurants in New York, such as Ichimura at Brushstroke and Jewel Bako, where you earned a Michelin star yourself. So how was your job in New York different compared to working in Tennessee?
It was more customer understand the traditional sushi style. More than the Tennessee customer. That's why I try to change the mind, making the more traditional style, little by little.
Right. Interesting, right? So this country, I think even sake is becoming more popular in the South as well, and also more sake breweries being born, we discussed in the last episode. So obviously, when you cooked in Tennessee is different from now, but I think the transition since then is so fast and very impressive. So yeah, I think you had one of the most unique careers in America as a sushi chef. So I'm curious what's going to happen from now on at your own place. So anyway, so we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll dive into the essence of edamame sushi and how Mitsu's own philosophy makes his omakase menu so unique. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs on HRN Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kiko Katayama, and my guest today is Mitsunori Isoda, who is the executive chef at Omakase Room by Mitsu in New York. So now you are the chef at Omakase Bar at Mitsu, Omakase Room at the Mitsu in West Village, Manhattan, and you serve a 14-course Omakase edamame sushi menu. By the way, edamame sushi or edamame sushi, they're the same, but Japanese people tend to say edamame sushi because it's just a language flow, a words flow sound. But edamame sushi can be called edamame sushi. So omakase means leaving it to you, to the chef, and fully trusting the chef capacity to make your dining experience pleasurable and satisfying. So could you tell us what exactly edamame sushi is?
Used to be edamame sushi mean the fish from Tokyo Bayside. Then only using the from the sea, the ocean fish, not the river, not the lake, not pond, only from the sea, the ocean, the fish. That's why. Example, no unagi, freshwater eel, always coming, sea eel, anago, like that. Then, used to be, it's not the convenience, the sipping, like, like no refrigerator. That's why, mostly, traditional styled sushi, like a marinade or cured, like that.
Right. So edamame, I mean, the Tokyo Bay was the beginning of a sushi that used to be a fast food served out of the truck, like carts. And for example, we eat salmon, which is half ocean, half river. So I think my father's generation, he was scorned like, why do you eat salmon? It's not sea fish. So, okay. And that's the things that really quickly changing, because with the very high quality salmon, everybody's eating salmon sushi in Japan too. So that's the original nature. And then you said also the cured style of sushi, that's a Kansai style, which is also kind of Kyoto and western area of Japan, right?
Tokyo sushi, Edomai sushi, it's like an example. Kohada, it's cured. It's mostly traditional sushi.
Okay, right.
Then also tuna, bluefin, wild bluefin, tuna, the marinade. My style is with dashi. Like that. No salmon. That's why we don't have a salmon on the menu.
Right. So you stay purist.
Yeah, I try. But the very, it's a change the, you know, culture. Now people eat a lot of the salmon sushi. Yeah, it's a different style, the new style, like sushi coming. But I try to make a traditional style. That's why no salmon, no hamachi, yellowtail either.
Right. Yeah, so I'm glad somebody is really trying to be a stay traditional because there's some beauty of it. And so by the way, listeners who are not familiar with kohara, kohara is a shiny fish, and it's very perishable that you rarely, rarely see kohara. But as a sushi chef in Japan, it's kind of like your, that's like a, how you make a good steak. It's a test how you are good as a sushi chef. So kohara is one of those items you should definitely go eat, order at the Japanese sushi counter in Japan. I just mentioned quickly that, you know, pressed sushi that was in the box, pressed and cured, including river fish, because the supply of fish in that area, western part of Japan, was different. And Edomai sushi's history is much newer than pressed style sushi in Osaka area. So people say sushi, but there are two types. Edomai is what we are familiar with, but Kansai pressed sushi, oshizushi, that's another delicacy. So maybe you should look for it when you travel Japan, or some Japanese restaurants in this country serve too. So anyway, so what is your philosophy other than trying to stay purist when you make sushi at your sushi bar?
It's always looking for the customer. Then I try to catch up the, you know, between my taste, the customer taste. Then still keep traditional, the classic Edomai sushi style.
So how do you gauge the customer's preference?
Yeah, the before customer always think, too much think. I have to eat between sushi, eat gari. It's pickled ginger. I take off the pickled ginger, then always serve end. Omakase course the end. If too much eat the ginger, it's gonna be your taste. So everything ginger. I always explain to the customer to, when you're gonna sit the sushi bar, enjoy for the omakase sushi chef make it.
Well, I think what you're trying to say is that, you know, the idea of omakase is you kind of make the whole experience as amazing as possible. So you have to, probably you don't serve soy sauce to dip because you add and brush the perfect, perfectly flavored, perfect amount of soy sauce over your nigiri piece. So they don't have to worry about it. They don't have to add extra wasabi or soy sauce. And also in between, you said, eating too much ginger, which is kind of tempting. I tend to eat ginger too much, but it's the balance, right? You keep have that spicy and the very vinegary and sweet ginger. It's a sensational, but you really numb your tongue. So you really miss the whole point of eating that classic style of the fish, that you really chew on the umami of the fish rather than the soy sauce. So yeah, I totally understand. And when I got lucky to get the seat at your sushi bar, and I know you are closely paying attention to each customer, and you keep, if it's necessary, you keep asking questions and gently nudge, eat it now, and all those things. Like, you are really like trying to orchestrate the experience of the diner. So I was very impressed. What you're saying is just what it's done at your sushi counter. So yeah, great job.
Thank you so much.
So, and your menu is structured very uniquely. So, for example, you serve tuna temaki first, which is normally served at the end of the course. So why did you do that?
I also have a very important ingredients in the temaki hand roll. Shari, the sushi rice, and also tuna is most restaurant. Very important fish. Then also very crispy the seaweed. That's why I give it to the welcome to the restaurant, the hand roll. Always I told the customer.
Right. So it's the test of the chef because of the flavor of tuna and also the crispiness of nori seaweed. Okay, so you must be very confident to do that because, you know, that's the test. People can leave if you don't like it, right?
Right. Especially Osaka people eat the hand roll first, then no good something that long, yeah, they're going to leave. Very strict.
Right. Oh, yeah. So Osaka people tend to be more straightforward in expressing, I think, their dialect also, very frank.
Right.
And it's kind of, to me, very close to English. You get to the point and there's no, like, emotional leftover. You just get it done quick and move on. And I like that a lot. So, okay. And then there are numerous types of fish in edamame sushi, but some are more important than others to showcase chef's skills, like I said, the kohada earlier. So what fish, also people call it neta, is most important to you and why?
Kohada. Mm. It's kohada. I think that most chef thinking like that, because the need traditional skill. If you don't have a classic style the skill, you can prepare for kohada.
Right. So there are other, you know, perishable shiny fish, right? Why is kohada so difficult?
If you can quick prepare, break down the cured coming the fishy taste. That's why some customer say that I can eat the fishy taste. I think the real nice kohada coming the not the fishy taste, sea taste. That's why they're mostly important for edamame style the sushi.
Mm, right. Well, kohada is very small. That's probably it's easy to go either fishy or ocean scent.
Yeah.
Right.
The mostly expensive fish.
No.
Then now, especially right now, coming the baby kohada once a year, like a season, the month, or sometimes 3 weeks. We call the shinko. It's kohada's baby.
Mm-hmm.
Especially right now, the price is 2,000 for pound.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah,
but still, the even the kohada, sometimes like yeah, 10 hundred for pound, pretty expensive. I think the only coming the from Japan. Actually, people call the gizzard shark, but the other name is spotted sardine. It's sardine. But then people think like it's not expensive fish. But actually very, very expensive fish.
Right. I think kohada in Japan is a very special, I mean, texture and how it looks and the shininess. I mean, maybe because I eat at sushi places, but kohada is something I think you can't just call it sardine's family because it's so special. But all right, so listeners, it's the kohada you just have to try to order at the sushi place in Japan because it's it has a lot of reason to do it. It's the history, the skills of the chef, and also uniqueness from the local sea. So, okay, and another thing is rice. So I heard that rice or shari is the most important element of your sushi. So, and each sushi chef has his or her own recipe. So how unique is your recipe of rice, sushi rice, or people call it the shari?
My sushi rice, shari, I used red vinegar, akazu. And also, the arajio, it's a salt from the Okinawa. Then, now really, I put in the sugar. It's mostly, usually, chef making the little bit sweet the sushi rice, shari. My sushi rice more salty taste. It's a traditional style, the shari, sushi rice. We call the shio jari. Sushi, salty the sushi rice. It's a traditional the Edomai style.
Okay.
Classic sushi rice. Because used to be the sugar was so expensive stuff. Our Japan is not like a rich country. We couldn't use in the not really the sugar. That's why classic Edomai sushi, shari, is more salty taste.
Right, and but also you said, I remember when I had dinner at your place, you don't use salt in other fish part, neta, because
right.
It's going to be too salty. So you try to bring out the best umami out of the fish and then balance that.
Yeah.
With the salt in the rice only, so it doesn't get too salty. And also, I think you say that akazu, that's the red vinegar to mix with rice, that's used made with sake leaves, which is already very sweet. It doesn't require sugar. So I really tasted that balanced sweetness and saltiness in your sherry, and that was really a successful recipe. So. Yeah, that's a very well-calculated recipe, I think.
Right. I think the other weather, the humidity to coming that always different, the recipe. That's why I don't have a recipe. I do in the, it's coming, my experience, the mix vinegar with the rice.
Right, so you have to be very careful. Temperature, moisture in the air, and also everything, right, of the day. And the
yes.
People who eat has different appetite or kind of conditions. So you have to really read everything. That's what you said earlier. You have to read your guests, and that includes everything from the preparation to guests' conditions to someone's preference. So it's not just a cooking food for someone. It's about everything. It's almost like a director of one evening, I think.
Right.
Okay. And then another thing I wanted to discuss was the egg. So every edamame course, sushi course menu has the egg at the end. And the like rice, the egg is very different depending on who makes it. So what's unique about your egg?
Only egg, my eggs come in the not edamame style. It's Osaka, Kyoto style. The not usually people call the eggs the gyoku, mix the fish with the eggs or shrimp paste with the egg. But my eggs only pure the Japanese eggs, like a jidori eggs.
Mm.
Then I put in the honey. I burn the honey. Then more flavor, more, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I think your people call the regular eggs like castilla, like the Spanish kind of stuff, castilla, like spongy stuff, and more savory. But yours, I thought it was like kind of dessert flan style and with some sweetness and caramelized with honey. So I really thought one was not enough. I wanted to have more than one. So that was very impressive. So where do you get all your fish from?
Except the tuna, bluefin tuna, other fish from Japan. It's coming overnight.
Mm. Right, because you have relationships from your past cooking career. Right. So
I just build up the connection.
Mm. Yeah, I was wondering because it must be very hard, right? Because you cannot just go to Toyosu and give me the best one. You have to have someone you know to be able to manage the best one personally.
All right.
Right. Okay.
Mostly, I have a connection from the local also in Japan. Hokkaido, Kyushu, some Toyama, see the ocean, the Japan side. Yeah. Then they send to the Toyosu market. Then big company just help the English paperwork.
Right.
But even the wild bluefin tuna from Spain now. Then later coming to Boston. If you don't have a connection, you can get it straight directly from the Spain, the Boston. You have to buy from Japan, the Spain, Boston tuna.
So who's your customer at the Omakase Bar? Omakase Room by Mitsu?
So usually coming the neighbor also. New York. Then from Tennessee, other states, they always follow me, the customer.
Wow. So you have a fan base from the past, of course.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And so now speaking of customers, eating at the sushi counter in front of the sushi chef is a little intimidating, even for Japanese people too. So could you give us some tips on how to eat properly at a sushi counter?
Yeah. Usually sushi chef making the sushi for you, put on the getter plate, eat right away, then one bite, not two bite, except the temaki hand roll. Every each piece You have to eat one bite, then right away.
Pop in your mouth.
All right.
Right. Yeah, it's a taboo, right? If you bite, you just completely destroy the texture, integrated texture right. experience. So you can't do that. And what about using fingers or chopsticks?
That means that you can use in the chopstick, but the sushi chef making a more tight sushi. We don't want to break the sushi.
Mm.
If you break the sushi, you don't need a chef. You have to, you know, respect the sushi chef, eat the finger more easy.
Mm. Right. Yeah, sometimes the sherry, the rice is so flaky and beautiful and delicate. I understand they don't make it tight. And if I use chopsticks, it's just, it looks like it's falling apart. And I probably use like a couple drops of rice. And I really prefer with hands by myself personally because of the textural experience and, you know, the temperature as well. And there is always a kind of wet cloth or just for yourself to clean your fingers. So I think that's probably the mainstream way for Japanese people to eat with fingers. So, right. So what else? If it's served, you have to eat it right away, right?
Right. Right away, it's very important. It should have an expiry time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then have to have an expire.
Wow.
I already explained to the customer. That's why I put in the sushi on the plate, 1, 2, 3, then eat.
Mm. Right. That's true. And because it's a timing and the flavor. And that again, the texture, how much it can hold, is so delicate. And also, you just don't want to leave it because it's so delicious anyways. But that's the thing. So 5 seconds, that's your rule.
Right.
Right. Okay. And I know that you serve omakase, which is all the items are determined by the chef, you. So, but if you can order a la carte, how do you order it? Because, you know, I mean, it's a majority of us. It's hard to order sushi. So any suggestions?
Just an example. Like now it's squid, aurika. It's a big green fin squid. Or sometimes like a golden cuttlefish. We call it sumiika. Then, also, some special, the mako, keyword, saba, aji. It's like, I never put in the omakase menu, usually. Yeah, you have to try it, the squid.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, if we go to a la carte restaurant, of course it's outside of your restaurant, then we just ask for what's in season. Is that the right way to say?
Yeah.
Okay. That solves a big problem. I don't know what to say because I don't want to be, I don't want to look kind of silly, but yeah, I'll use that technique. Okay, so what are your plans and dreams?
I always keep chef making the sushi in front of the customer. Yeah, some restaurant, the executive chef, not really the always there standing the sushi bar. Someone making the different chef coming the on the your front the bar.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that was. But I wanna always make in the sushi front of the customer.
Mm. Right.
They keep making the classic sushi for you.
Right. So, you know, it sounds like you are kind of the agent between the customer and nature that provides you with tons of beautiful seafood, and you got the skill, and as an agent, you can serve the best bounty of the nature to customers. So, and I think you're doing it. So I witnessed what you do. So, yeah, good luck. So where can we find your updates online and on social media?
Yeah, many people put on the Instagram, the My Sushi. You can check it out, the our company, the website.
Okay. So your Instagram is omakase room .nyc. It's room, omakase room. NYC, and the website is washokurooms.com. It's washoku rooms.com. washokurooms.com. Okay, so, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mitsu, and good luck and hope to see you at your beautiful sushi counter and enjoy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so the classic, beautiful, authentic sushi, carefully made, and Mitsu is the agent of nature. So listeners, I highly recommend it. So, and also you have listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for short topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotema.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Liam Warner, and we'll take a summer break in August. So I will see you in September, and thanks for listening. Have a great summer. Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.